We come to the lecture of the 2nd of July, 1904. Rudolf Steiner starts. He says, when a person sees a thing, he asks about its origin. He presupposes something out of which that which he has seen has proceeded. Only applicable upon things which occur in the world. Please note, here are just notes, and I'm just translating the notes as I see them. These are the two sentences, that's how the sentences are. Only applicable upon things which occur in the world. We must presuppose something where we no longer ask, out of what did it arise? What is the origin of it? And that which we presuppose, which we can't ask the question, where did it come from, that is the logos. You are not permitted to present the question, when did the logos arise? Because if you would ask that question, then you would be limiting the logos by suggesting that it arose earlier or later. The logos is now and always is. Er war jetzt und immer. The logos was now and always. All concepts of time cease to have a significance in reference to the logos. What we now say about the logos applies just now as it did apply in many billions of years ago. The logos doesn't exist within time, but the logos exists before all time. We will now develop several concepts. If we designate as the superexistence, the Übersein, the superexistence, if we designate as the Übersein, the superexistence, that which in itself the absolute, that does not have everything what we in the main know, we designate the superexistence as something which in itself is absolute, which does not have in itself what we in the main know, then we have in an abstract form fenced in, circumscribed, that which we think of as the logos, namely something which in itself is contained in itself, established in itself, an absolute. So here we've described the first logos, Sat, Father. If this logos alone is assumed, it is in itself resting. It's there and it's not there. It's above, beyond all existence, never perceptible because it is beyond, above all perception. It is lifted up above all existence. Now, out of that there proceeds the fact that this logos is the absolute hidden, the absolute occult, because this logos is elevated above all manifestation. If he is not to be occult, then he must reveal himself. Then we have with it, then if he reveals himself, then we are concerned with his mirror image. We are concerned with the manifested, the revealed logos. Now if you think about this thing, then immediately you will recognize in this concept two concepts. so that we have a threefoldness. Because in the revealer itself, that which manifests itself, there must be a self-revealing activity. And so you have the first logos, offenbara, revealer. The second logos would be offenbarung, revelation, activity. And the third logos would be revealed, manifested mirror image. So on conceptual grounds, purely on conceptual grounds, we arrive at the existence of three logi. The first logi, that which is the revealer. The second logos is the revelation, the activity. And the third logos is the revealed, manifested mirror image. That's a philosophical, conceptual aspect. The Indian aspect in ancient India, they call the first logos Sat, the second logos Ananta, and the third logos Chit. In the Christian tradition, the first logos is Father, the second logos is Son, Word, and the third logos is Holy Spirit. Now these three logoi are in the first place so elevated that we designate them for everything which one in the ordinary sense will designate as revealed or perceptible, and again must designate them as occult. In relationship to that which is revealed or perceived, in relationship to that, we again must designate these three logi as occult. Thus you have three occult beings. They must in the first place become revealed, become manifest. They are there only three. Thus they can only reveal themselves to each other. The Father reveals himself to the Word, the Son. The Word, the Son, reveals itself to the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit reveals itself back again to the Father. So you have three kinds of revelations. Conceive them for ourselves as being transferred to three beings, so that the activity of these three beings consists in the fact that they take it over, they carry this over, and these three are able to enter into differing relationships. It is possible that the Father hides himself in the Word and communicates himself in this hiddenness, in this concealment. He conceals himself in the Word and reveals himself to the Spirit. That's the first possibility. The second possibility then is that it is possible that the Word conceals itself in the Holy Spirit and reveals itself to the Father in this ensheathing of the Holy Spirit. That's the second possibility. The third possibility, then it is possible that the Holy Spirit reveals itself in the Father and manifests itself to the Word. These are three possibilities of relationships. Now it is still only possible that the Father sheathes himself in both, in the Word and in the Spirit, and reveals itself thus. So we have the following. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We must think of this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 as present in a beingness nature. There arises this Wesenhafter, this beingness is the seven relationships of the three Logai, essential forms of beingness. Now Rudolf Steiner presents these seven different relationships. One, relationship of all power. The Father reveals himself to the Word. Two, relationship of all wisdom. The Father reveals himself to the Spirit. Number three, relationship of all love. The Holy Spirit reveals itself to the Father. Relationship four, all Gerechtigkeit, all justice. The Father conceals himself in the Word and reveals himself to the Spirit. Fifth relationship, all redemption, alle Erlösung, all salvation. The Word conceals itself in the Spirit and reveals itself to the Father. Six, relationship Allheiligung, all holiness. The Holy Spirit reveals itself in the Father. The Holy Spirit conceals itself in the Father and reveals itself to the Word. Seventh relationship, all Seligkeit, all bliss. The Father sheathes himself in the Word and Spirit and becomes revealing itself. And so we have the seven beings arising out of mutual fructification. These are the seven rulers, the seven mights, which stand before the throne of God, and these are their qualities. Their qualities arise out of the relationships of the three Logoi. Only seven are possible. Now he goes through them. The all power consists in the fact that the Father reveals himself to the Word. And this one designates as the first creation or as the chaos. After the all power has fulfilled its task, then there rules the all-wisdom, which orders things according to measure and number. After the all-wisdom has fulfilled its task, there rules the all-love. It brings into the whole creation the principle of sympathy and antipathy. After the all-love has done its task, there comes the all-righteousness. It regiert, it rules, it brings karma into it, which means it brings in birth and death. After the all-righteousness has fulfilled its task, there begins the all-redemption its work, and brings redemption, salvation into the situation, which means the last judgment. After the last judgment has worked, then there begins the all-hallowing, begins its work, and brings all over hallowing into it, and then begins the all-seligkeit, the all-blessedness. Now, if we think of all this as distributed over, let's think of all this as distributed over seven planets. In truth, all the seven are there, but always one of them has the full power, whereas the others are in a subservient office. if we take out the four spheres, it is our sphere. Thus, ours is the Losungswort. Losungswort means watchword, password, battle cry, catchword, slogan. Thus, our battle cry, our catchword, our slogan is the following. The Father reveals himself in the Word. No. The Father verhüllt. The Father conceals himself in the Word and reveals himself to the Spirit. And with that, we have Christianity given. With this cherub, we have the guiding word, the leading word, the guiding sentence, the leading word. He calls this password the cherub. With this cherub, we have the light word, the light wort, the guiding word, and with that also the sense of Christianity, the wonder of Pentecost. Through the Word, which on the one side contains the Father in involution, everything is through the Word, in which everything is contained, which on the one side, the Father in evolution, was everything made. Through this Word, which on the one side contains the Father in evolution, everything was made. Hence, the Gospel of John. Task of the next planet, Mercury. That's number 5. All salvation. The Word conceals itself in the Spirit and reveals itself to the Father. When that which is our development, the Word, Christ himself, conceals, Christ, the Word, which is in our development, conceals himself and reveals the Father, that is the next. Never can the Son come to you other than through me, Spirit. If he should, the Spirit, live in the next planet, if the Spirit is to live in the next planet, if it is to be spread out, it is to evolve itself, then the Word must sheathe itself in the Spirit. That which applies, or which is dominant, the main theme in the next planet, must already be prepared in this planet. The Word must, preparing itself for the Holy Spirit, which will then reveal itself, the Word must involution itself. That is, however, here death. The mission can be fulfilled only if the Word ensheathes itself up to death, surrounds itself with death, and this is a sense of death and the cross. So far are we to understand, he was crucified to the death. This is the sense of the Christian central mystery. In the Bible, Jesus says, I do not strive against the book of justice, in the sense of Melchizedek. Melchizedek is the angel of the earthly time of rotation. Now, I don't know anywhere where it says in the Bible where Jesus says, I do not strive against the book of justice in the sense of Melchizedek. I don't remember Jesus ever saying that. You find out. I don't remember that anywhere in the Bible. Anyway, that's what it says here. Then continue. In the next planetary development, the Son will lead to the Father that which the Son has gathered through the Spirit. And here ends the rather sketchy notes of this lecture. All I hope is you've got more out of this lecture than I have. And now we come to the lecture of the 3rd of July, 1904, entitled Evolution and Involution. Rudolf Steiner starts, "If we represent to ourselves the development of a planetary system, then we must take into consideration the following. Evolution, development, occurs in the way that always two conditions alternate for every being, evolution and involution. Now we must represent to ourselves the seven stages as evolutioning themselves and involutioning themselves. In every next planet, in every successive planet, every one of those beings who are the ruling beings, they go a stage further. They proceed a stage further. Number 8 is the evolutionized seven. Insofar as they develop themselves further, they develop themselves into the next one. When you arrive at seven, then you can't go any further. If seven has to become eight, then the process must already be there. It is nothing other than, the eight would be nothing other than a repetition of the first. So the eight would be seven upon another stage. And insofar as we proceed further, we see that the ladder itself changes. Rudolf Steiner has done is put everything on the blackboard, seven series of numbers going down, side by side, but going down, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then the next series, he starts with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The next series is pushed down. He starts with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The next series, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The next, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. The next, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The next, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That's the seventh series. He says that you see the series themselves change. We get 12 regents and a 13th, which is superfluous. This 13th brings the whole planet into a condition in which it was in the beginning, but only in a higher condition. With 12, we must conclude, so that in every verfassung, in every arrangement of a planetary chain, you have not seven, but 12 elevated leading spirits. Of those is only in the first of the, is only by the ash, the first of the eight, not in action, and so far. I don't know what it means. Okay. Now it continues. Our concepts belong to the Rupa mental world. These beings lie beyond our concepts, so that you can't talk about one proceeding out of the other, but you have to talk about timeless, non-time relationships. Now, one has recognized these beings as the 12 regents in symbols. These 12 regent beings are recognized as symbols, for example, the zodiac through which the sun passes. And corresponding to the stages of the macrocosm is also the enhancement of the consciousness of the microcosmic development. So that the number 12 is always appropriate, and there always was the 12 leading spirits.
Thus, for example, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles, the 12 knights of the Grail. So, as well as being macrocosmic, as well as microcosmic, is the number 12, is both macrocosmic and microcosmic. The number 12 is the holy number which lies at the basis of everything. Seven of them are in action. The other five has other tasks. So for the physical planet, there comes only seven in consideration. Hence, it is taught also, human beings of the 12 are taught only about the seven principles. And it is a mental deduction of beings which lie on the other side of the mental horizon. We're able to make the best concept of that as to how evolution and involution confront each other insofar as we present something of an historical nature. Evolution and involution always confront each other. Let's observe the Greek sculpture. The form is ausgeprägt, is expressed, outprinted. The actual essential nature remains within. If we now cast our glance upon the painting of the Renaissance, in the Greek sculpture, you have involution of color, evolution of form. Let us permit the painting to develop itself out of sculpture. So we have form in involution, color in evolution. That which formerly was involution passes over later into evolution. With the 16th century, there begins the age of the personal mental and of the scientific development. Preceding this 16th century, there was the age of painting in the High Renaissance, since Cimabue. In Michelangelo, the personal camera manus appears in evolution. On the other hand, the color and sculpture appears in evolution. Michelangelo's camera manus is in involution, and you have evolution, color, and sculpture. The principle of camera manus talks, but the principle of camera manus anspricht. Principle of camera manus addresses itself, but not through itself. It is in involution. If evolution proceeds further, so camera manus, which is intelligence, must evolve itself in the new, in the modern age. Hence we see that that which we call science succeeds painting. People, as it were, descend from pictures, and they themselves speak. The painters has, as it were, painters have pre-foreseen the future, but they foresaw the future in form and color. Man in the modern age has transformed into science that which there had been involved. If we would permit Michelangelo to resurrect himself, so we have Galileo. Thus, while the intellect evolution evolves itself, there was again involved wisdom, and that evolves itself into poetry. The poetry becomes the preserver of that which is filled with wisdom. Hence, the conclusion is not given with an initiate in the theory, but in poetry, and the question mark Goethe. So that the person who recognizes his mission in relationship to the present, he must transform the involuted wisdom into thought-out wisdom. These are the alternating periods of involution and evolution. We are able to consider correctly a phenomenon if we consider not only that which is evolved, but also that which has been involuted. Every successive condition of evolution of the planet thus indicates a previous condition of involution. Everything which today is intellect upon the earth was in previous planets involution. On the other hand, there evolutionizes, evolves itself, evolutes itself, that which today has been repelled downwards, namely kama rupa, and that's the astral body or the desire body, the sense nature. This played at that time the same role as today kama malas, which is the intellect consciousness, plays today. Right, continue. Not all pitris have reached the normal condition. Their highest principle thus today is still kamarupa, and they strive above all things to ennoble kamarupa, to ennoble the astral body. Thus, if our goal or ideal is the ennoblement of kama manas right up to the highest peak, we are not able to say that this goal of this world was first evolved by us. That which is of this world is kama rupa. That is what is being given. Kama manas, that's the ideal. And of this ideal, is of this world, you have to consider kamarupa still as an ideal. Kamarupa has to consider its ideal to be kamamanas. Thus, two things is upon this earth besides all other things. Man, who does not get his ideal from this world. For him, the tempters are those who say to him, hold yourself to the joys of this world. These beings whose highest nature is related to our lowest nature, one designates in the Christian esoteric sense Satan, or the unjustifiable prince of this world. Thus, if that person who, as a leader, who is called the sun hero, if he appears, then he must show as a reality the ideal. Hence, he must overcome the tempter. Hence the symbolic indication that the overcoming of the last stage of evolution is represented through the temptation. Always there is a battle of the being that works itself out of the involution into evolution. That which is already evoluted as a being. Knight and dragon, Siegfried and the Lindwurm. Siegfried and the dragon. Here ends this lecture. Well, I didn't get very much out of this lecture either. I realize these are notes, but nevertheless I'm not impressed. Now we come to the next lecture of the 4th of July 1904. Existence, livingness, consciousness. What we must exactly understand are the connections between the concepts Sein, existence, Leben, life, and Bewusstsein, consciousness. What does one understand them in a mystical way? Let's imagine a child that learns to write, and all the relationships which occur during the learning of writing. Every stage for itself. The writing teacher, the material, everything is prepared, only the child is not there. If you represent to yourself this is as the first thing that belongs to the learning of writing, then in this way you have represented to yourself the first aspect of existence. Now that I do understand. Okay? Let's continue. Now all the activities, the grip of the hand which the child acquires for itself, that you have as life separated from existence. Now let us leave the first and the second aspects for themselves, and let's take the aspect which yields itself when the child has completed with the activities. It comes only into consideration what the child has given as the power of writing, namely consciousness. So all over we find the three aspects, existence, life, and consciousness. Let's hold these concepts more exactly. Because when in theosophy you speak of Sein, existence, which he says form, Sein, existence and form, everything the same to him, Sein and form, Sein, existence, form. In theosophy you speak of Sein, form, life and consciousness. Quite often you bring into them false ideas. The real situation is that the Sein, the existence, enters into an interaction with life. The result of that, when Sein interacts with life, you get consciousness. Now let's take the concepts which we have acquired in yesterday's lecture of the 3rd of July. Let's apply them. If we consider the interaction of Sein, existence, with life, we see that Sein, life, Sein, existence, passes over into life. Life takes up into itself the Sein, the existence. That which in this way is taken up by life into existence, that sheathes itself again into involution, and that passes up into consciousness. So we're able to say, every consciousness is the evolution of an involuted life and Sein, life and existence. If we are able to investigate a consciousness, so we have to ask ourselves, what is the life which is in this consciousness, and what is the Sein, the existence, which has been involuted in this life? Let's take our consciousness. This consciousness which we now have. If we investigate it, we shall characterize it as I have attempted to do in my book Theosophy, by attaching myself to Jean-Paul. Self-consciousness is I am I. I am an ego. I am I. Now let's try to investigate what is involuted in this. The life must have been involved in this consciousness, or the life of this consciousness must have been involved in it. This consciousness, which now is self-consciousness, must have earlier been a consciousness life. And this consciousness life is involuted in it. If we think away from the I am I, if we think away the I, then this consciousness does not say, I am consciousness, but it says, I am life. Consciousness has first developed out of life. Since, however, we are on the stage of consciousness, so we have, instead of the living consciousness, we have the conscious consciousness. Previously, we had the existing consciousness. I am the Sein, the existence. Let's try to translate this in an orderly way. I am the I is easier to translate. It is the given fact condition which man experiences. We know that. When you say, I am the life, that's what we must investigate much closer. If we do that, we shall find that we go beyond the mere I, we go beyond that to the fundamental basis. And we must ask ourselves, how has it developed itself? I am the life. So there must be an interaction between Sein, existence, and life. That Sein must be involuted in life. If we consider this, we get a concept of the human being himself. Because that which lives in the concept is the human being before he became the I. Man, the human being, is the general, the universal. The I is the special. Man is involved in the I, comes to evolution in the I. So if on this lower stage we express the proposition, we must say, I am a human being. Now if we express this proposition, so we fetch out of our inner being that which is in an occult way inwoven with it. And we understand what we are no longer, but what we once were, and that which was contained in us as an involuted aspect. So the first proposition, I am the I. The second proposition, I am the life. Now we come to the third proposition, I am the Sein, the existence. If we take this, so we must make clear to ourselves that this is a totality of external relationships which furthermore has completely inserted itself in the inner being, as the innermost core, kernel, as a third layer which lies hidden under us. I am I equals that which we meet today. I am the life. I am the consciousness. We speak, we address the whole external world in the stage of consciousness. We have the being as such, which lies at the basis. Because previously there was not consciousness of and life, but relationships. Relationships which have balled themselves together and have become our innermost being. So we must transform the proposition into I am an element, because that is the elementary. Thus we have these three stages of consciousness which we can follow in ourselves. The first stage, I am an I. The second stage, I am a man. The third stage, I am an element. If we proceed further, then we have to leave behind the threads of these three concepts. But these threads always repeat themselves. It becomes again existence insofar as it unites itself with the other. Good heavens, I'm completely getting lost. Anyway, well, let's proceed to the bloody bitter end. Rudolf Steiner continues. Thus, the fourth is, thus, the Vereinigung, the union. So when we rise up, we come to the fourth proposition. I am in the Vereinigung. The word Vereinigung means union, combination, concentration, confluence. So when we rise up to the fourth, we say, I am in the confluence. Then there relates itself the I as the earlier facts which have united themselves together in order to find their way into life. The ego consciousness thus is again taken up into existence. Likewise, existence earlier was already consciousness. So that in the first Sein, an earlier consciousness is already involved. When we now go back from the proposition, I am a Sein, element, we come to the proposition, I am a pre-consciousness. This pre-consciousness, one can also express it by saying, I am a Diane Cohan. Now, in Christian esotericism, it is expressed like this. First, I am a god. Secondly, I am a Herrlichkeit. A Herrlichkeit, something noble, something elevated. Element. Third, I am a might, man. Fourth, I am at a Gewalt, power, princedom. Now, earlier on, we have named the thing the same way. What we earlier on called all consciousness is now pre-consciousness. What we earlier on called life consciousness or plant consciousness, that is the elementary. What we early on called man-animal consciousness or dream consciousness, I am man-human consciousness. Now we reach intellectual consciousness, self-consciousness. So again we have the microcosmos in its chain. Let's just think, conceive of the fact that now you break through the next stage. In the confluence, thus, the ego becomes an element. Now Rudolf Steiner puts this on the blackboard. I am Diane Cohen. That equals pre-consciousness. I am an element. That equals sein, existence. I am a man, human being. That equals life. I am I. That equals consciousness dash self-consciousness. Now he says, sein, existence, equals psychic consciousness, soul consciousness, psychic consciousness, soul consciousness. Life equals hyper-psychic consciousness, hyper-soul consciousness. And consciousness equals spiritual consciousness. Now the self-consciousness is lifted up into existence. What thus today we take hold of in thinking, that becomes existence, in order that one time we can have a consciousness of the whole of mankind, insofar as our I, Kinubakup and cups, caps over all human beings. This one then calls the psychic consciousness, the soul consciousness. The next stage will be the stage whereby an ego is able to live in other lives. That is the hyper-psychic consciousness. And on the highest stage, we take the world into our consciousness. Everything is in us. Spiritual consciousness. Everything which is outside is already in, that's divine consciousness. Now if we conceive to ourselves that the surface of the paper represents the pre-consciousness, now it limits itself, it einengt sich. It constricts itself. One, I am an element. Now it constricts itself in something which is still less. Two, I am man, human being. Then three, I am I. One, the I becomes then self. Two, existence and enters externally. Three, it radiates also the life. It überstrahlt, radiates over, überstrahlen, irradiates also the life. Four, it irradiates the whole elementary existence and then comes out again in that which it was. So, if we recapitulate, so we find that in the I there exists a thinkable strong involution, that it contains the complete triads involuted. Its being contains the ego completely hidden in darkness. If we test what it has entered into this darkness, so it was the life. It has illuminated this darkness, it shone in. And previously, there shone into life the sein, the existence. And in the sein, was involved the pre-consciousness. The revelation of pre-consciousness is now again the word. So that we are able to say, in the beginning was the word, and the word was by God, and God was the word. The same was in the beginning with God. Everything were made through that, and without the word was nothing made that was made. In it was the life, and the life was the light of man, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not understand it. The ego must shine towards the outside. That which is inward, which is occult. No external is supposed to damage the ish. The ish must become full of power. What it has inwardly in it must appear in external force. What does it find? It finds that what had earlier evolved itself. It finds the tempter, the serpent, which winds itself outside. The eye must overcome the serpent. And now we must be clear to ourselves that this is sign for the fact that every person who has born in himself the living Christ, when he overcomes the deadener, the tempter, the death, the prince of this world. Now he quotes Mark chapter 16, verses 17 to 18. Believers will be given these signs of power. They will drive out demons in my name. They will speak in strange tongues. If they pick up snakes or drink any poison, they will not be harmed. They will place their hands on the sick and they will get well. So you are in the light, then your eye will be single. It will permit the light to pass through. If you, however, are a rascal, you will be in the darkness. If, however, you will be in darkness, how great must the darkness be? Now, further notes. Condition before the year 30. I, superhuman I, Christ. I, human Chela, I, Jesus, Palestine. I, human Chela, I, John the Gascoigne, Alexandrian. Condition after 30, I presume 30 AD. Christ in Jesus, Jesus in John. What it concerns itself in the Testament are the facts that stand behind the words. In the other holy books, there are teaching. In the Old Testament, it deals itself in relation to the new as an involution. It is the macrocosm in relation to the microcosm. Here ends his lecture. And now we come to the lecture of the 7th of July, 1904. Rudolf Steiner starts. He says, out of what I have already described about evolution and involution, it is to be seen that in every phenomenon, we are able to ask the question, what is evolved and what has been involved? When we consider the physical earth, we will find the different stages, conditions of aggregate, the solid, the liquid, the aeriform, the etherform. These substances are only, according to their external side, perceptible by the physical human senses. They have always an inner side, something which has been involved, involuted. Perceptible is the external aspect which has been evolved. When we take fire, air and water, we can say that they are representative for the three stages which we have designated. Fire represents the stage of Sein, existence. Air represents the stage of life. Water represents the stage of consciousness. One expresses it so in such a way that one says that water stands in some kind of connection to consciousness, because for the physical human being, the astral represents that within which he feels himself as becoming conscious. If we go to the earth aspect, so we have arrived at that stage of existence when man becomes earthly, he becomes self-conscious. So that we can present these four conditions of aggregate, these four conditions in the human being, like this. Sein, existence, Leben, life,
Bewusstsein, consciousness, and then again, sein, existence. If we go back to the condition in which man was, as we have often described, in a jelly type of state, so at that time he was not, didn't arrive at the fact of being able to utilize within his inner being the air as such. Man then was a water man. With that, it is clear that the organ for the taking up of air at that time would have no reason, no goal. And also, it was not present. And also, there were not present the air animals, the birds. We are in the process of preparation to becoming a lung man, and the animals as well, who stand in a sequence. Man prepares himself to take up the air, and that can occur only in so far as he prepares for himself an external form in which the formless, that which is without form, can live. So the lung is nothing other than the evolution of that which has been involuted in the air. So you can say with that the lung is the evolution of life, of the air. Just hold fast the following. Man develops himself from a being without a lung to a lung animal. He creates himself form, and into the form he can draw in the life. The accompanying phenomenon is the world of birds. The jelly-like man now becomes solid. He takes into himself the earlier created, the earlier chaotic, dust-like material in himself. And parallel with this assimilation of the materiality, there goes the air. Two things perform themselves. Assimilation of the earth dust, and the sucking in of the principle of life with the air. He becomes, from the inward aspect, soul life, soul living, seelisch lebend, a living soul he becomes. Thus, we have to diagramize or describe or verzeichnen, indicate this moment. The bird world is that which remains as an eternal symbol of the human living soul. Hence the phoenix, which continuously burns itself up and renews itself out of the ashes. In such a process as the creation of the form through a principle, we must regard that as something typical. Earlier, we had in the air as such the external sheath for that which is contained in it as life principle. And now the lung as the external sheath for that which is contained in man as life principle. Macrocosmic life and air stand to each other in such a connection as microcosmic human life and lung. So we can take the Bible in a word-for-word way when it says it puts together the dust of the earth with the living human being. If we survey the whole evolution, so there precede
every mineral condition of life, there precede three earlier conditions, three conditions before the mineral condition of life, and three conditions after the mineral condition of life. If we would ask ourselves, how do they relate, these seven conditions? In the middle, there's a certain relationship between Sein, existence, life, and consciousness. It is approximately that of an equilibrium. If we represent this to ourselves, that it is, as it were, divided, so we receive, with the middle planet, we have the balance. Sein or life A, life or soul B, spirit or consciousness C. The planet is in its middle condition. A equals B equals C. But other relationships are possible. You can have A equals B, B greater than C. Or you can have A greater than B, B equals C. Or you can have A is greater than B, and B is greater than C. Other relationships are not possible. And when existence sharply preponderates over the other conditions, so that life and consciousness are contained in a germinal state, we have the arupa condition. If we permit life to appear so that it contains Sein, existence, so we have it with the form. We're dealing with rupa, the form. If consciousness overpowers, preponderates, so we have the astral element. If they're all equal, then we have the physical. When we have the arupa condition, we have evolved existence, but involuted life and consciousness. The rupa condition evolved Sein and life, involuted consciousness. The astral condition, all three evolved, but Sein and Leben, Sein and life, is greater than consciousness. In the physical, you have approximately an equilibrium of relationships. Continues. We have tried, from the different standpoints of things, to approach things and to be able, in a fluid way, to maintain mobile concepts. In every form of understanding, you're only to see a sheath for the being. This is an important occult proposition, that in every form of understanding, you're to regard just as a sheath for the being. The being itself must live in us. We must make continuously clothes and sheaths of the being. But we must be conscious to ourselves that in these sheaths and clothes, the exact essential nature of the thing is not at all contained. In the moment where we have found a form of expression for the inner nature of the thing, we have made the esoteric into exoteric. Never can the esoteric be in any other way imparted other than in an exoteric form. Pictures continuously formen of the grasping. Bilder fortwährend, oh good heavens. You have pictures of a form of grasping, but every time you must be in a position of overcoming your self-created form of understanding. First you are, then as a second, there are the created forms of grasping, which you yourself have created. Thirdly, again, you are you, insofar as you take the forms into yourself and has overcome them. That means, first you are Sein, then your life in your own self-created forms, and thirdly, you are consciousness in the line four, in the life forms which you have assimilated for yourself. Or also, you are you, and you should evolve yourself in your forms in order then to involve yourself out of the evolved forms, to take the evolved forms and involve them again in yourself. So is human understanding also Sein, life, and consciousness. It is impossible in a teaching to see dogmatism, which is only on a truth. That's only the second moment. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm translating it. Only when you have overcome it have you self-seen the truth of things. Hence the important sentence, man must, in order to know the truth, must dogmatize. But he must never see in dogma the truth. And with that, we have the life of the man seeking for truth, who can remelt dogma into the fire of concept. Hence, the occultist concerns himself in the freest way with dogma. This knowledge, this slag in the world of concept, and again the counter-slag, that means dialectic, whereas man calls logic holding fast of the concept. Dialectic, thus, is the life of logic, and the person who understands the spirit of dialectic is there where he touches the higher domain of knowledge. There he is able to transform the rigid, dead concepts into livingness when they are partitioned upon certain persons. Logic transforms itself into a conversation. Hence Plato has dialectized the logic and transformed it into a conversation. Now, another note here, the green serpent of Goethe. Gold, wisdom, light, the form in which wisdom lives itself out. What is more noble than light? The answer, speech. The end of Steiner's mysticism, Silesius, friend, it is now enough. And here ends the lecture. I ask myself, why did I take the struggle to put this stuff on tape? Why did I do it? Why am I translating it? Because I have an inner passion to know everything that Rudolf Steiner said. Behind all this, of these lectures, there's a certain approach that ties itself in with Hegel, a certain abstractness, yet Rudolf Steiner is trying to take these abstract philosophical concepts. An individual can sit down and without being an occultist or a seer, purely with the aid of his intellect, he can develop concepts such as Sein, Leben, consciousness, existence, life, consciousness, and the individual can, out of his own normal consciousness, think of such thoughts, put all sorts of diagrams together, purely without being a seer. Then having done that, having passed through that stage, Rudolf Steiner at certain points tries to tie it in with the Bible and what we know. He tries to make it living. It's more of a training in thinking. But I do feel it's unfair. I think the German publishers ought to have made some notes after each lecture. The German publishers ought to have taken hold of some of these German fellows who know a great deal about Steiner's work and say, give me your interpretation of what Rudolf Steiner is saying in these lectures, and add it afterwards. So in order to give the student a real chance, because obviously these are just notes, but no, they don't do it. This is the way the Teutons work. They'd rather want you to suffer. They're not going to do anything to make it easier for you. In the German word, there's a language called Schadenfreude, which means the joy and glee in someone else's suffering. I'm perfectly sure this is not conscious. I'm perfectly sure the person that published this was very rigid and said, oh, I'm putting it down, I'm not going to change anything. This is what Rudolf Steiner said, let them have it, and period. Certainly is not conscious of what I'm saying now. But I do wish that in their soul they would be conscious of the person who's reading it. What sort of thing is going on in the mind of a person like myself? I'm a normal human being who is struggling. Surely they should give me some help. Then I go back to my question, why am I doing this? Because I feel there's something there. There's something you're getting. I can't put it into words, but there's something you are getting. There's a change in my consciousness as I'm struggling with the sort of presentation Rudolf Steiner has here. I can just understand a bit here and a bit there. It just sort of tunes up your mind, because later on Rudolf Steiner went through it all again in the October 1904 lectures on planetary evolution, and those are more understandable. And also it's quite possible, if we had more of a better report of these lectures, it might be more understandable to us. Anyway, here ends the tape. God bless you.